My name is Nick, and I struggle with drugs, alcohol, relationships, and compulsive spending. Hey, guys. Now, just for a moment, let's play a game. I want you to imagine that you hear a knock at your front door tomorrow, and when you answer the door, you find a policeman standing there. And he says to you, "Sir or ma'am, the sheriff's department is going door to door in your neighborhood today to warn folks about an accident that occurred last night at a company lab a few miles from here. The problem was corrected this morning, and, you know, we have no idea whether or not your residence was affected or not, but we're strongly urging everyone in the area to be tested for radiation exposure immediately." And he hands you a flyer with the address of a clinic on it, and so you hop in the car and rush there immediately. And you see the doctor, and before he even says anything, you know from the look on his face and the strange feeling that's coming over your stomach that something isn't quite right. He takes your blood to do some tests. He examines you very carefully, and when he comes back into the room, he says, "I'm very sorry. You're going to die." That's what he says. He says, "You're going to die." You see, he's a very brilliant doctor. He's technically very capable. He doesn't have much bedside manner. But you ask him, "I'm going to die?" And he says, "Yes." And you say, "Well, surely there's something that can be done about this." And he says, "Yes, there are some things, but they may or they may not help. We're going to move you over to the hospital, and you're going to spend your time there now." And you ask him, "Well, how long am I going to be there?" And he says, "Well, about 2 months is what we expect you to live." So you go over to the hospital, and you're laying there in bed. You have absolutely nothing to distract you from your present predicament, no drugs, no alcohol, or any of that sort of stuff. You just have time to sit there and wonder to yourself, "Why, oh why, did I wait to live until it was time to die?" You wonder to yourself, "Did I live a worthy life? What if I could go back and do it all over again? What would I have done differently?" And in the midst of all of this depression and anxiety and fear and confusion and anger, it suddenly dawns on you, "Hey, I've got just a little bit more time left." So you pick up the phone, you call mom and dad, and you say, "Mom and dad, I just called you to let you know that I stole $20 from your wallet when I was 17, and, you know, I just called to apologize for that. I'm really sorry, I'll pay it back." And they say, "Don't worry about it. I'm just glad that you called." And, you know, when they share with you the events of their day, you listen to them like you've never listened to anyone before. And after you're done talking to them, you pick up the phone again. You call your granddaughter or your niece, and you ask her, "You know, how's school? How are your friends?" You know, when she's talking about her day in her life, you listen to her like you've never listened to anyone before. And you don't stop there. You invite her over to the hospital, into the room. You take a sheet off the bed and take two chairs, and you build a tent, and you sit down, and you have tea. And then imagine you call up your boss. You say, "Boss, you know, I wasn't really the greatest worker. I probably cost your company more money than, you know, I earned you. And I've got some money in the bank. I'm not going to be around any longer. I want you to have all of it. It was yours anyway." And then you pick up the phone, and you pick up the phone, and you pick up the phone, and you call everyone who you have ever wronged, and you make amends to them all. And then imagine, in that hospital room, during those final 2 months, even as your lungs and your bones are corroding from the inside, that you might get up and sing one last time and dance one last time. How many of you honestly believe that during those last 2 months, even as your body was being put to death, that you could be more alive in the spirit than you ever have been since the day you were born? Raise your hands, please. Here's my question, please. What if you had just 2 months left to live? Every day of your life. What if you made the decision from this day forward to live your life one moment at a time, to forget about all your worries from the past, all your fears about the future, to live in this present moment and to leave everything else entirely up to a power greater than yourself? What if you came to believe in a God who could do anything and who would never let you down? Now, I'm here tonight to try and convey to you some hope in this program of Celebrate Recovery and in Jesus Christ. Now, there are a lot of misconceptions about Jesus and Christianity. You know, a lot of people believe that Christians were a very stuffy lot, you know? We just follow rules, and we never go out color outside of the lines. We never make mistakes. We just do things perfectly and rigidly, and we judge anyone who doesn't. But that's not Jesus at all. No, no. Jesus, not religious, is much more than that. Jesus is congratulating the winning team. Jesus is stopping to help someone on your way to the job interview for the job you desperately need. Jesus is losing everything, your house, your bank accounts, your credit cards, everything you've ever owned, only to discover that you never needed those things anyway. Jesus is stronger than Satan, and he's tougher than hell. Jesus is all of these things, and he is so much more. Now, when Jesus was about to depart from his disciples, he said in John 16:22, "So with you, now is your time of grief, but I will see you again, and you will rejoice, and no one will take away your joy. In that day, you will no longer ask me anything. Very truly, I tell you, my Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. Until now, you have not asked for anything in my name. Ask, and you will receive, and your joy will be made complete." Can you imagine what your life will look like when Jesus makes your joy complete? What are you struggling with? Are you open to the idea that it might be possible for your life to change, for things to be any different than they have been your entire life? Because you see, that's the first step, is that openness to change. Well, perhaps you may think that your situation, your circumstances are so bad, so far gone, that there's no way that you could ever recover out of that. Well, maybe you feel like a failure, you know? It's just, it's lost, it's irrecoverable. Well, let me just describe some other failures and see if maybe you know their story. After separating from her abusive husband, she moved out of the country with her infant daughter. 7 years out of university, she was jobless and considering suicide when she signed up for welfare and began spending her days in a coffee shop writing a children's story. That's J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter. Conceived during a one-night stand and raised by a single mother on welfare, she was molested at age 9, got pregnant when she was 14. She had a string of abusive relationships before a boyfriend introduced her to smoking crack cocaine. Oprah Winfrey. A failed soldier, farmer, and real estate agent. At 38 years old, he went to work for his father as a handyman. Ulysses S. Grant. Cut from the high school basketball team, he went home, locked himself in his room, and cried. Michael Jordan. His fiance died, he failed in business twice, he had a nervous breakdown, and he was defeated in 8 elections. Abraham Lincoln. Now, I can imagine some of you thinking, well, yeah, but, you know, those were some remarkable people with amazing skills. They worked very hard to achieve something great in life, you know. I'm just an ordinary person with larger-than-normal problems. All I want is for my life to be okay again. And, well, you know, their stories are hardly unique. Here are some more. David Gorman was raised in an abusive environment of prostitution, bootlegging, and drug abuse. As a child, he watched his mother shoot his father in front of their house and say to him, "Look what you made me do," before helping him up and back inside the house. He was sexually abused and became a sex and drug addict himself. But after working the 12 steps of Celebrate Recovery, he found spiritual freedom and serenity, a new life. He became a leader of his church, and together with his wife, started a successful hair salon with a strong gospel atmosphere. Dave McMillan was raised by a mother and father who literally took turns beating him. His father, a cop, supplied him with liquor as a teenager and encouraged him to dominate others physically and to be a womanizer. When he's drinking in abusive ways, finally led his wife and kids to leave him, he came to celebrate recovery and worked the 12 steps. He is now clean and sober and free from rage. He has found forgiveness, and for the first time in his life, he says he actually likes himself. He is hopeful that he and his family will soon be reunited. Pamela Combs' first memories in life were of being sexually molested by her father, and she grew up believing that her only purpose in life was to satisfy men. She found her way into a series of abusive and broken relationships before coming to Celebrate Recovery, where she found forgiveness, serenity, and a new identity in Christ. Todd Howerton started using drugs and alcohol when he was 13. Although his addiction was well known to his coworkers at American Express, he was able to stay employed there, and his life did not fall apart immediately. But after he married his wife, Dana, he lost his job and began regularly disappearing for weeks at a time, burying himself in binges of alcohol, cocaine, and methamphetamine. After he almost drove his truck over his wife while trying to escape for a bender, he went to Teen Challenge for 6 months, and when he came out, he and Dana began going to Celebrate Recovery. Now Todd is clean and sober, Dana is free from her codependence, and together they are enjoying a rich marriage rooted in Christ and serving together at their Celebrate Recovery, where they are an inspiration to others struggling with their own broken marriages. You know, testimonies like these aren't at all hard to come by in CR. I didn't have to look far at all to find these. In fact, you know, the evidence really is overwhelming that you absolutely can count on Jesus to cure the hurts, hang-ups, and habits of your life if only you will first find the belief that he can. And that's really what it is all about. If you are open to Jesus changing your life and you believe that Jesus will change your life, he will. Now, I was a drug addict, and I've certainly done more than my fair share of drinking in my time. And, you know, I haven't had a drink since November of 2012. I am, however, right now going to drink some of this water. But no, there is incredible power in Celebrate Recovery. You know, if you heard my testimony, which I gave a couple of months back, I talked about my insecurities with marriage, and you know, my difficulty in really, you know, committing to my girlfriend or my fiance at the time. And you know, I asked her to marry me. We set up a wedding, and then I walked out at the last minute. I did it twice. And that was before I got involved with my sponsor here at CR. And as a result of you know, working with him and finding a support team here at CR, I was able to finally overcome that fear. It was a terrible fear. I don't think I ever could have done it on my own. And truly, I don't think anyone can overcome their problems on their own. You need a place like this. I know I'll make those I statements. I know I need a place like this and a support team like this to really accomplish those changes in my life. And you know, Paul, the apostle, you know, he said that the church is a hospital for sinners. And I do believe that here in CR, we are operating the intensive care unit of that hospital. You're in the right place. So yeah, I finally overcame that fear of marriage. One of the things holding me back, by the way, was, you know, I my credit's not so good. Like I said, one of my problems is overspending, and you know, my idea of dealing with the bills was throwing them in the trash. So you know, I had a lot of debt that accumulated over time, and so my credit's not so good. I couldn't buy a house, and I thought to myself, you know, it really would be nice to have this place, you know, this place I could put my tools. There's, you know, I couldn't move into her house because, you know, there wasn't enough room for my tools. I needed that. Well, I despise the term, but, you know, they call it a man cave. Anyway, so I thought, you know, wouldn't it be great, you know, if I could have something like this? But, you know, I can't have that because they wouldn't approve me for a mortgage, and I figured I needed that in order to buy a house that had a man cave. Anyway, so talk to my sponsor. You know, my sponsor, he helped me work through this whole process, and, you know, I finally came to accept the fact that you know, this was for me, and I moved forward with the whole thing, and we did, in fact, get married just about 2 months ago. You know, and so after we got married, I was cleaning out the backyard, and there was, you know, some of the previous tenants, you know, they hadn't trimmed the bushes in the backyard in a long time, you know, and I came up to what I thought was the fence, you know, what was the edge of the property, and I started cutting away these blackberry bushes, and I saw what I thought was a door. You know, I was like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder what's back there. And so I cut away some more and some more. And you know what? There was that man cave after all. God will provide. So my question for you is, what are you expecting to find under the weeds and the bushes of your life, under all of the sin? What are you expecting to find when you get rid of all of that in your life? Are you expecting to find what it is that you need, or are you expecting to find nothing new? Because our expectations, of course, are incredibly important. Jesus did say, according to your belief, it shall be done unto you. So, I will close with this. Hebrews 10:35 through 36. So do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised. And it is a promise. God will provide. Thank you.